Live from Music Row in Nashville, this is Roy Mathock Jr.'s Money and Business Hour.
Good morning, Roy Mathock Jr. here, and we are talking money this morning, as we always do on Saturday morning. And today I'm going to kind of go through and make this very educational and in nature. I try to do that each weekend, but today I'm going to really kind of take it down that path, because there's so many things that you can do to invest your money, and especially if you're out at or near retirement, or you're wanting to get there one day. You want to make sure that, you know, you've got all your options. You know, I believe that power is always in knowledge, and when you have knowledge, you make good, much better decisions. And more than anything, you don't make really bad decisions because you've got something to kind of guide you. And so this morning, I'm going to go through pretty much all of the different places that we could put our money, everything from the bank to and mutual funds to annuities to every type of thing. So when we get done today, hopefully if you're listening in, it'll be something that you can say, wow, I learned something. And if you have questions along the way, you can always call in at 737-9522, 615-737-9522. You can also text me, text the number 38470, and in that just put the word question in, and it'll start the dialogue, and you'll be able to do that as well. And one more place, Roy at Roy Mathock Jr. for your questions via email. So, or you can just call in, as I said earlier. But as we get started this morning, you know, there's a myriad of places that we can put our money. And so the question is, where do we go? And, you know, as we are growing up as kids, we're told all these different things. And the first thing we're told is that you need to open a savings account. And when you open that savings account, start saving some money. Some other things we're told along the way are, you know, get good credit. And so that way you can get yourself in debt is what the answer to that is. But we're told to establish credit. Maybe we should go get a little credit card and borrow money on it and pay it off so we can get our credit rating up. We're told to get a good job that has benefits, get a college degree. You know, avoid things that involve risk, like going in business for yourself or things that would involve commission, and, you know, you got to get something guaranteed, need to find some benefits. And what I found is all of the advice given like that, which most people take, keeps you just slightly above broke. I've never seen one person get rich by putting their money in the bank. I don't generally see people that have good jobs with benefits getting rich. I see them just getting by. Very seldom have I ever seen someone that's highly successful, hardworking, that's on a salary, would make more as a salary than if they went out on commission. I mean, I just see all these things we're told all along that just don't seem to work out. And so today I'm going to give you the information that will allow you to move forward. And for some of you today, it may be that you need to change the way you're getting paid. Maybe you need to start the business that you talk about starting. Maybe you should do something extra so you'll be able to save money and get ahead. And then once you do that, where are we going to put it? And so the first step that we need to do is just understand the different options. And so what are some of the options? Well, let's start out. We have a bank account. A lot of people know what a bank account is. I mean, we go to the bank and we give them the money. Well, they call it a savings account. They might call it a certificate of deposit or a money market account. But what is that really? Well, what a bank is a big company. They're a big lending company and a borrowing company, and they borrow money from us, and we don't think of it that way. But when we walk in the bank, we take our money out, and the first thing we do is we hand it to them, and we say, can we loan this to you? We don't say that. No, what we do is they say, there's a savings account we can open up for you, and you say, okay, I'll open a savings account. And then when we hand it to them, in fact, what we're doing is we're loaning the money to the bank. Now, anytime you make a loan, the first thing you would want to know is, am I going to get my money back? That's the first question. And the second question is, how much are you going to pay me in interest? And so the bank sits there and they say to you, well, I'll tell you what, we're FDIC insured and guaranteed you'll get your money back. So give us $100 and it's safe. And you're like, okay, great, that's good. And then you ask them, well, what's the interest rate? And they say, well, right now our current rate on our savings account or our money market account is 0.2%. So what that means is if you leave your money here for 1 year and come back, we will give you $100 plus 20 cents. And people are like, oh man, I never thought of it that way. Yeah, that's what happens when you loan money to the bank. They borrow it from you, they turn around, pay you 20 cents on $100, and then they turn around and loan it back for 18%, which is $18 on $100. Or 21%, it's $21. Or a mortgage, and they loan it to you four times, or $4, versus borrowing it at 20 cents. So I sit there and I say, wow, I understand now how the banks get rich, but what about me? What's happening to me? All right, am I getting rich doing that? Absolutely not. And so what I came to the conclusion was, I would rather own the bank than lend it money to the bank. And so what? How do you own the bank? Well, you might own stock in the bank. And then you got this system where you got all these people running around, can't wait to get there and deposit their money in an account. They're getting nothing. All right. And then we loan it right back to them and get 5 to 20 times, okay, or 100 times, okay, the money back that we borrowed on. And we're like, wow, that makes sense, right? I think I should own the bank. How many of y'all think you should own the bank? And so how do you do it? Well, you might own stock in the bank. Now, am I recommending you buy bank stock? No, I'm just pointing out to you, if you own that, what that means is it's better than loaning. You would be much better to own than to loan. And so I always tell people the first step, if you want to start moving forward, is be an owner, not a loaner. And that's what most people do. They loan their money to very low interest. But that's what a bank account is. A bank account is one of those. You can get a CD. A CD right now, I think the biggest, you know, jumbo CD right now, if you have a lot of money in there, you're getting about a one-year CD. I think I read yesterday is getting 2.7%. So you lock it up for a year and you get 2.7% on that. And so still, you know, $100 would give you like $2.70, which still doesn't do much for you if you're trying to get ahead. But anyway, that's one of the play. I call those certificates of depreciation, because what happens is by the time you pay the taxes on the CD or the bank account, and then you take inflation into account, you're going backwards. And so that's the first thing. Now, we could go into another loaner position and we could buy bonds. You know, there's a lot of different bonds. You got treasury bonds, government, you know, different types of government bonds. You've heard of savings, you know, like U.S. savings bonds, those kind of things. And so that's where you still loan the money. But the difference is when you loan it, you may get a little more than the bank, but not a lot more, but you're loaning it. And then the government pays you back interest and eventually gives you the money back. And most bonds are sold in increments of $1,000. And so if you go out and buy a bond, there's a lot of different bonds you can buy. You can buy a government bond, which is backed up by the government. You can buy corporate bonds. That's where a big company would borrow money. But the bottom line is they're borrowing money. Why would you do a corporate bond maybe over a government bond? Well, the interest rate's usually higher. And so what happens is they pay you what they call a coupon. It used to be a coupon. They just electronic, but they pay you interest on that. So you go buy a bond, a 10-year bond. You pay $1,000 for it. If it's paying 5%, that means you get $50 a year on that bond. And at the end of 10 years, you would turn it back in and you would do that. All right, you get your $1,000 back. You could buy a municipal bond. That's where a government, a municipality like Nashville or whatever, will borrow money from the public. And when they borrow money from the public, what they'll do is in turn pay you interest on it. And most of the time, those municipal bonds are considered what's called tax-free bonds. So you get the interest, but you don't have to pay income taxes on it. And so a lot of different bonds. And then we have junk bonds. And so we're going to keep talking like this. 737-9522. This is Roy Matlock Jr. We'll be right back.
This is Roy Matlock Jr.'s Money and Business Hour. Now, back to the Money and Business Hour with Roy Matlock Jr.
All right, we're back. Roy Matlock Jr. here and continuing down the path of educating you when it comes to money, which allows you as an individual person to have some power. And the power is that, you know, you can ask the right questions, get the right answers. That's what it's all about. And if you have questions and you'd like to get those answered, all you got to do is just text me at 38470 and then put the word question inside of the topic. Hit send and it will walk you through the system and I'll answer some of these questions on air. Or you can call me at 737-9522. I'll be happy to do that as well. And it looks like we do have a caller. And Beth, are you ready? Are you there, Beth? Do we have Beth on the line? Hello, Beth. Beth, are you there? Don't have, can't hear Beth. Is Beth up from Franklin? Nope. Nope. Okay. All right. She's on the screen, but not there. All right, Beth, if you want to call right back in, we'll put you on there. Anyway, we're going to continue. So we were talking about banks to start with, and then we went in to talking about bonds. And there's different types of bonds, everything from a government bond all the way to a junk bond. And people ask me, so what is a junk bond? Well, a junk bond is considered less than investment grade by its actual rating. And so what that means is its credit rating, just like your credit rating. If you go to the bank and you don't pay your bills on time, the bank will charge you a higher interest rate in order to be able to loan you money. At the same time, if you are a company and you're borrowing money, Exxon maybe is what's called a investment grade bond, because chances are Exxon's going to be around for a long, long time and they pay their bills. And if they borrow money from the public, they're going to be able to pay you back your interest. Now, if you go to an airline, most airlines or a large percentage of airlines are not considered investment grade bonds. Some of them are junk bonds. And why are they junk bonds? Well, junk bonds, they have to pay a higher interest rate. Their credit rating's not quite as good. But we can name right off the bat a lot of airlines that are no longer around right now. They went under. So it's more risk in it. So if you buy into something that had junk bonds, you're getting a higher return because the interest rate's higher. However, the possibility is they won't pay you back. And if they don't pay you back, you would lose your money. So you have risk in those. So that's what the bank is. The bank is a lender of money to you. You lend money to them. They make a profit. Companies borrow money. Governments borrow money. Municipal bonds, that kind of thing. Municipalities borrow money. And then we go into stocks. And what stocks are is where you have a piece of the ownership. And stocks are based on future earnings. When you see a company, you know, if you're driving your car today and you're driving a Chevrolet and you wanted to, you felt pretty confident that Chevrolet is going to be around, the first question you would ask if you're trying to figure out what a stock is worth, how much money are they making? And they break that down into the individual shares of stock. And then once that is determined, you say, well, what is the likelihood that next year it's going to make the same amount of money or more money or less money? And then you start deciding what it's worth. And that's how you go about deciding what a stock is worth. It's based on the earnings. And most people buy stocks based on what they heard and not based on earnings. And that's why most people that buy individual stocks don't do very well, because they listen to the rumors and they listen to things like that rather than finding out what it's really worth. You know, I read an article about, you know, Warren Buffett. He's one of the top, you know, known as the greatest investor around. Warren Buffett went out there and never started businesses. He bought businesses, and then he was able to take those businesses and grow those businesses. And basically what he did was he would buy companies that were good companies that were running, and he bought them for less than what he felt like the value was worth. And he said, you know, the reason I'm not on Wall Street is because there's too much noise. I stay in Omaha where there's not as much noise, because the noise is what makes people think things are worth certain prices. He said the reality is the price is based on what the company's value really is, okay? And he said, if I value that company at $80 a share and it's selling for $110, I'm not going to buy it. But if I value that company based on the earnings and the prospects, and I buy it and it's trading it at 80, or it's $80 worth 80 and it's only trading at 40, then I'm going to go buy that. And that's how they go about doing it. And so most people, I recommend never buy individual stocks, because the majority of people don't have the resources to be able to figure this stuff out, nor the expertise. And so we don't do that. I tell people never buy individual stocks. Now, does that mean there's some people out here listening right now that you should do that? That's your own individual thing. Everything we talk about on the show is in general. You have to sit down with someone and make a decision on how you're going to go about doing things. Now, you could buy annuities. Now, when you buy annuities, an annuity is something that's the opposite of life insurance. So what life insurance companies do, if you buy life insurance, you're making a monthly bet or an annual bet that you're going to die. That's what you're betting. You're saying, look, I'm going to throw $100 a month against $500,000 if I die. So what I'm doing is I'm going to bet $100 a month that the insurance company, that I'm going to die and it's going to pay $500,000. Now, we don't want to cash in on that thing, but the reality is that we're doing that. When annuities began, it's exactly exact opposite. The annuity says, give us $100,000, and what we'll do is we'll pay you a monthly income for the rest of your life. It's called a lifetime annuity. In the old in the years before now, for the most part, companies would give you a pension plan, and that pension plan was an annuity, and you could get that annuity. You could get a life annuity where it just paid for the rest of your life, or you could get a joint with survivorship. And what that means is that it would pay for you and your spouse's life, but it would pay less. Or you could get a deal maybe where it would pay so much and then only pay your spouse half that much. And every time you lengthen the time that it had to pay, meaning you and your spouse, what would happen is the payment would go down. Now, on a life annuity, if you put in $100,000 on just a pure life annuity, you would get the maximum monthly payout. But if you died the next month, you lost your family lost the $100,000. So that's called annuitization. Most people don't want to annuitize. I don't like giving up my money and with that inside. But what you're really doing is you're saying, you know what, I'm going to beat the insurance company. Again, I'm going to beat them. Here's how I'm going to beat them. I'm going to live so long, and I'm going to pull out way more than $100,000, and they're going to have to keep paying me when there's no money there. I'm going to beat the insurance company. So what happens is when you're buying life insurance, you're betting you're going to die. When you buy an annuity, like a fixed annuity, and annuitize it, you're betting you're going to outlive the income that you would have gotten had you just had the lump sum yourself. And so there's three types of annuities. Now, I generally speaking tell people don't annuitize. There's other ways of doing things. But right now, you can buy fixed annuities. You can buy what's called an indexed annuity, and you can buy what's called a variable annuity. So what are the difference? Well, a fixed annuity is this. It pays an interest rate, it's guaranteed, and it gives you the option if you want to annuitize it. In other words, take the money, put it in there. Let's say you put in money for a number of years. Now you've got a lump sum of money. You can annuitize it and say, give me a regular income for the rest of my life or the rest of my spouse's, me and my spouse, is life. That would be a fixed annuity. Now, a fixed annuity has guarantee of principal. It also has an interest rate, and it's about like a bank. One of the benefits of an annuity is that the interest earnings grow tax deferred until you pull it out. Now, one of the negatives is that if you pull it out prior to age 59 and a half, it's going to be treated like a retirement account, and you'll pay a 10% penalty plus taxes on what you pull out. So that's a fixed annuity. Now let's go to an indexed annuity. Well, what is an indexed annuity? Well, an indexed annuity is kind of like the fixed annuity, except it's got a different little twist to it. And what it does is it basically has the guarantee of principal, but then what they do is they say, well, we can put it into an account, and this account, this annuity account, is tied to an index. So let's say it's tied to the S&P 500, or it's tied to the Russell, you know, index, which would be more small companies, or it's tied to an international fund or whatever it may be. And so what they do with these indexed annuities, they give you a percentage of that index, but they guarantee that it can never go down. So you got the guarantees, you got some of the upside on an indexed annuity. So what we're going to do, we're going to take a short break. We're going to continue down this path of all the different places. My name is Roy Matlock Jr., and we'll be right back.
This is Roy Matlock Jr.'s Money and Business Hour. Now, back to the Money and Business Hour with Roy Matlock Jr.
All right, we're back. Roy Matlock Jr. here. You can text me with your questions, 38470. Put the word question in, and it will walk you through the system to get your questions asked and answered. And I had a question here. It says, what about Tennessee Commerce Bank, a billion-dollar business that failed a few years ago? Well, banks, the interesting thing about it, see, banks are FDIC insured, the depositors are, but if you buy stock in the bank, like I had mentioned earlier, you may buy a bad bank and they can mess it up, or it could be another company. And that's why it's very difficult for people to buy individual stocks. They got to know how to price them. They got to know when to buy them. They got to stay up on them to find out if they actually should keep them. And I'll mention this about some of you that have a lot of your money in company stock. The only thing I would say about company stock, you may have a great company, but mutual fund managers who invest in stocks, generally, after all their research, generally speaking, don't have more than about 3% of their money in any one stock. That's a typical rule of thumb. So that means that their biggest holding might represent 3 cents on a dollar. And so if something were to go under that one big best company that they had the most money in, it still doesn't have the gigantic impact on the actual returns of the fund. So anyway, we were talking about the different, if you're just tuning in, the different places that you can put your money. We talked about banks, we talked about bonds, we talked about individual stocks. Now we're talking about the three different types of annuities. You've got a fixed annuity, guarantee of principal, it pays an interest rate, allows you to take an income on it called annuitization. We have indexed annuities. An indexed annuity is similar to a fixed annuity, guaranteed principal, guaranteed by the insurance company. And then what happens is you pick an index. And well, the way this works is, so let's say you choose the S&P 500, and that is the index that you're up against. Well, what will happen is they may charge what is a spread, or they call it different things. But the bottom line is if the index makes 10%, you might get 6%. Something like that if it goes up. But if it loses money, you get zero. So one of the reasons people buy an indexed annuity is this. It can only go up and never go down. That's why they do it. Now, do I think an indexed annuity is the best place for people to put their money? Occasionally, but in most cases, I don't do that. I mean, but each individual person is different. Do I like indexed annuities rather than banks? Yes, but It's individually, you have to have your situation looked at, because certain people are different ways. You know, what is your tolerance for risk? Does it bother you? Does it bother you to the point that you make bad choices if we have the market, you know, going the wrong direction on you? The third type of annuity is called a variable annuity. Now, a variable annuity and an indexed annuity have a couple things that are similar. One is that both of them give you the opportunity to work to have what's called a lifetime income guarantee. Now, it's not like annuitizing. The difference is that one of these annuities, both of them might say, look, you put your money in and we'll guarantee you 5% for the rest of your life, even if your account balance was to go to zero. All right. So let's say you put in 100 grand, you start pulling 5,000 a year. It's invested. The market's, you know, not been doing good on an indexed annuity. You're just not making any money. You're not losing, but you're not gaining. And you're pulling 5,000 out of that account each year. And so the first year, the market's zero and you get 5,000 out. Well, now you only got 95,000. The second year, the market's zero and you pull, now you're down to 90. Well, eventually, you know, if the market never grew, and you just kept running on, and you just live forever. Before you know it, you've got no money left, and that's when the in the lifetime guarantee kicks in. They say, look, we're going to pay for the rest of your life and your spouse, even if you have no money left. That's what you're buying, and there's a cost to it. So what we do, we buy those lifetime income guarantees, but we pay for it. It's insurance. We're insuring a lifetime income. That makes sense. That's why annuities cost more money than, say, a mutual fund that doesn't have any kind of guarantee tied to it. So what happens is this. An indexed annuity is tied to an index. You can't lose your money. All right, it's guaranteed, and you get a piece of the upside. If you go to a variable annuity, the variable annuity is a mutual fund type of account inside of the annuity. And what happens is when the market goes down, your money goes down. When the market goes up, your money goes up. So there's no principal guarantees, but they do offer income guarantees. Now, one of the primary benefits that I see with annuities is tax deferral, because you can put it in as much as you want, leave it in there as long as you want, and unless it's in an IRA type thing, you never have to pull it out. So let's say that you've got plenty of money. The amount of money that you have is you're never going to use it. It's going to be passed on to your children. You might put some money into some annuities and then let the money just grow and grow and grow. And then they're the beneficiary on it. And so that way you're not paying taxes on it. You still have control, but you're deferring the taxes. And then the kids are the beneficiaries of the annuity. So that might be an idea. Or maybe you fully funded your retirement accounts. You fully funded your 401k at work or your IRAs. You've done everything like that. And then you've got some what I call opportunity money. Maybe it's in a mutual fund or something like that. And so you got plenty of liquid cash. And you say, look, I'm never going to money need, what can I do? Well, I can put it into an annuity and I can let it grow and never touch it, and it just grows tax deferred. If I put it in a variable annuity, it'll be in the market, or I can put it in an indexed annuity and I'll have a little bit more downside, that kind of thing. And so that's what annuities are. What are the negatives of annuities? Well, annuities cost more money. That's what happens. The fees are higher. Why are the fees higher? Because you're buying insurance. That's what you're getting. You're paying for a lifetime income guarantee. You're paying to have tax deferral. So are annuities a bad thing? No. But are annuities more expensive? Yes. Do they have penalties? Yes. That's why you're buying insurance. When I go to the bank, I'm paying very high cost insurance by the fact that I'm not getting anything. That FDIC is costing a lot of money. So we insure things in order to protect us against bad things happening. So we said, well, hey, what if everything went, the stock market went down? Well, if you're in an annuity and you had some guarantee, you wouldn't have that risk. So we pay for those kind of things. So that's what annuities are. Now, what about mutual funds? Mutual funds are what most of you have right now in your retirement accounts through your work. You have a mutual fund choice. You've got all different types of mutual funds. But what's a mutual fund? Well, the first thing that you need to know about a mutual fund is it's mutually funded. See, if you want to get investment advice and you went to somebody and said, look, I want to hire you to manage my money, and you wanted to individually hire that, you'd have to have a whole team of people, you know, researchers and analysts and stuff like that. And it would be so expensive. The only way you could do that is you would have to have ridiculous amounts of money to be able to offset those costs. And so that's when a mutual fund came about, to where people pool their money and mutually fund it. And so we'll be right back. This is Roy Matlock Jr. I hope this is being helpful. We'll be right back in just a few minutes.
This is Roy Matlock Jr.'s Money and Business Hour. Now, back to the Money and Business Hour with Roy Matlock Jr.
Roy Matlock Jr. here. We're back and into the last segment, and we've been just having an education session as it comes to the different things that you can put your money in. We talked about everything from banks and bonds and stocks and annuities, and now we're talking about mutual funds. And what are mutual funds? How do they work? And the word mutual fund is in itself tells a lot. We mutually fund it. That's how someone that's got $50 a month, when I first got started, I started with $50 a month in a mutual fund. And to this day, you can still get into mutual funds for like $50 a month. And so you can get started investing with very little money. And not only are you're investing with professional money managers. And so what a mutual fund company, they do is they take my money and your money and everybody else's money, and they mutually fund, we mutually fund it into what's to an investment firm. That investment firm will charge generally right around 1% to manage that account. And then what happens is if they get 12%, on that year and they have a 1% management fee, you get 11. If they lose money, well, you lose money. If they make money, you make money. But historically, if you go find good mutual funds, they've been able to do well over time. The stock market itself has averaged almost 10% forever. And so what happens is when you put your money in there, you leave it alone, the market on average will go up about 2 out of 3 years. So you're going to have a year where you don't do well and the money pulls back. So I always recommend to people when you're investing money, always be putting it in monthly. And then that way you buy it when it's a little high sometimes, a little low other times. But over time, it's called dollar cost averaging. And what happens is you're paying yourself first. You got a monthly investment going in. So regardless of what happens, you pay yourself. And so, you know, every month, if you have rent or you have a house payment, you pay it. That's what you do. Well, why wouldn't you just pay yourself and make that a regular payment to where each month it gets drafted out of your checking account? You don't have to worry about it. It just keeps going and you keep investing your money. And then one day you wake up and you're like, wow, you know, I'm doing pretty good. So you got mutual funds. And in mutual funds, you've got different types of mutual funds. You have bond funds, where they will put it in bonds. You have stock funds. They'll put it in stocks. You have different types of stock funds. You have stocks that, funds that go into large companies, mid-sized companies, and small companies. You might call a small company fund more of an aggressive growth fund. You call a big company fund, might be a growth and income fund. And the reason they call it that is because the stock has the ability to grow, and it also will be in companies that pay dividends. You have a growth fund. That might be one that might be your, you know, Google and invest in Starbucks. It's not really paying dividends. Might be a dividend here and there, but really not much for that. You're buying it because it's going to grow. Then we have international funds and global funds. Now, an international fund is a fund that will invest outside the United States. A lot of companies that are international companies we do business with, we think they're, you know, U.S. companies. For instance, Johnson & Johnson is one I, you know, most people, if you were to ask them, they would think it was a U.S. company. It's actually a British company. And so there's a lot of different companies out there that we do business with, not just the Mitsubishis and the companies like that that we know are international, but we do business with Nestle, which is Swiss. And there's a lot of different, you know, companies out there that we're already doing business with. So, you know, people buy into international funds where they invest out there. Now, a global fund has the ability to invest not only abroad, but also in the U.S. And so that's the difference in a global and an international fund. So we have all these different funds. Then we have some where they could be a balance fund. What's a balance fund? Well, a balance fund is when you have part stocks and you have part bonds. So that's your education today on different types of mutual funds. As you are younger, you're going to be more aggressive. As you get older, you're going to be less aggressive. As you have a lesser timetable to get before you're going to be pulling on the money, you become less aggressive, generally speaking. And as you have longer timetables, you can be more aggressive, and you have time for the market to do its ups and downs. And so now, is this information I'm giving you trying to tell you this is what you need to do? No, you need to meet with someone. You need to get good advice. This is not a show to give you advice, okay? It's giving you knowledge, all right? This knowledge will allow you to go make decisions. Now, there's other places you can put your money. They're called managed accounts. Now, managed accounts are set up a little different, whereas a mutual fund, for the most part, is either a load or a no load. What that means is you pay a broker and you purchase that fund and you pay a brokerage fee, or you go do it on your own and you buy your own mutual fund and it's called a no load. You don't pay a fee because you're not getting any advice. You're doing it yourself. And so you got to decide, do you want help or do you feel comfortable enough to do it on your own? I think most people should choose to get someone to help them, someone that does this kind of stuff. And obviously I've been doing this for many, many years, and I've watched people do it on their own versus having someone like me to help them. What I find is that most people, when it's coming to their money, they get emotional about it. And when you get emotional about it, you tend to make bad decisions when you operate on emotion. And so I always tell people, you're better off having a coach, somebody you can talk to that will help you. Now, does that mean that you can't do it yourself? No, you can absolutely do it yourself. I mean, there's always going to be Home Depot in every industry. You can go out there and do it. You can be the backyard mechanic. You can do all that stuff. But what I figure from my perspective is I've always tried to get expert help in areas that I'm not good at. You know, I started taking martial arts, and so I went and found someone that is a Marine that's done this forever. And the guy, I trust him. So therefore, when he tells me do this, do that, I don't question that because I've checked him out and I figured that he knew what he was doing. And so when your money comes in play, you need to be thinking that way. So, well, am I really ready to do it on my own? Now, what I see many times is that people really don't do it on their own, but they just don't get any help either. I read an article not too long ago about, you know, if you're making $150,000 a year or more, the majority of those people have a financial advisor. But people that are not making money, they don't have a financial advisor. See, here's the other thing about that. If you don't have a financial advisor and you're not making any money, you're doomed. Okay, more than likely, because you're not making enough money to make mistakes. All right, you're going to have to be really smart all along. So anyway, so those are the different ways you can purchase a mutual fund, load or no load. You can also buy something called an index fund. An index fund is not managed, and the reason I say it's not managed, it's just mimicking the index. The idea is the stock market's going to get, you know, historically has averaged about 10%. Let's just put it in there and let the index just match the index, and I'm going to do okay. The benefit of that is that the fees are very low because there's no management. The negative on that is that the mutual fund companies, a lot of them outperform the index, and if you can find funds that historically outperform the index, then you're giving up money by being in an index fund. And so, but index funds are out there. A lot of your 401ks, you have index funds as options. And in many cases, I'll look at the options in people's 401k and I'll just tell them to put it in the index because some of the options they have are not that good. Now, another way you can put your money, invest your money, is you can go with a managed account. A managed account's where you pay no brokerage fee, but what you do is you pay an ongoing fee. And what that ongoing fee is, it might be all in about 2%, and you will end up having the ability to move from one management company to another management company. You never pay anything in the form of a brokerage fee. However, you're paying a management fee. And so when someone says they don't charge a commission, all right, that doesn't mean you're not paying any fees. It just means they're not charging a brokerage fee. You don't pay a front-end charge to invest your money. What do I think about managed accounts? They're okay. I mean, I think that mutual funds, if you pay a brokerage fee and you got very low-cost mutual funds, I don't think you're going to be better off going in a managed account. I think that, you know, there's reasoning for both. The managed account may give you a little bit more flexibility. The brokerage account, you got to pay every time you move it. So you want to put it, if you go in somewhere, you leave it, and it becomes very low cost. And so what happens is there's all these different things. You might want to buy rental property. All right. So, or I hear people now, especially in Nashville, where they're wanting to flip properties. And I'm like, really? Come on, guys. You think it's that easy? All right. I mean, most people in today's world, okay, think real estate, especially in this area, is all you got to do is just buy something and you're going to make money. It doesn't work that way. But if you want to buy a rental property, realize there's some positives and negatives. What are the positives? The positive is you get tax deferred growth when the house goes up in value. You don't end up having to pay taxes on it, okay, until you sell it. You get rental income. That's positive. You get depreciation on the property, meaning that you get to actually write off a property that's going up in value. But you're getting to take it as if it's going down in value. So you get some tax benefits on that. Now, what are the negatives? Well, the first negative is you're not very diversified. You know, if you own one rental property, you're either 100% rented or 100% vacant. So that's a problem, and you better be in a position to weather the storm if you have vacancies, if you have upkeep and maintenance, or somebody tears your house up, things like that. So there's some negatives there. Real estate investing, for the most part, is a hands-on investment. Mutual fund investing, for the most part, is a passive investment. In other words, you just get a statement in the mail, you open it up on a mutual fund, and you look at it, or an annuity, any of those kind of things, and you look at it, and you say, okay, and it gained money. You didn't do anything. You didn't go over there and ride by your property and check to see if, you know, what's going on. You didn't ride by and see that, you know, somebody's got a party there and tearing your house up. You didn't do any of that kind of stuff. What you did is you went out and you bought property and you did that kind of stuff. And so what we're going to do, we're going to continue next week talking about real estate, because real estate is something, your personal residence, very important. Rental property. So if you have rental property, we do that kind of stuff. And we'll talk about that, you know, and what you should be considering when you're, if you're going to buy rental property. You know, I grew up, my dad had rental properties from, you know, had them for 50, 60 years. And so I'm very familiar with that. So with that being said, guys, I hope you've enjoyed the show. My name is Roy Matlock Jr. Visit RoyMatlockJr.com. Download How Money Works. If you want to reach me or any of our endorsed people, you can go to RoyMatlockJr.com, and I will see you next weekend.
This is Roy Matlock Jr.'s Money and Business Hour.